This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the socialising voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Matt, we're back.
We are back, boss. So we did say last time out, didn't we, 2 weeks ago for the semi-return of Between the Sticks that we would be back for a proper return. And this is very much it. Between the Sticks is back for the upcoming season. And what an exciting season of goalkeeping we have ahead.
Oh, so many stories already. I know there were a few people disappointed that we didn't do a show last week, which we should have, really, but we were, we were here, there and everywhere, weren't we, really? So it just wasn't possible. I did actually get a text from Jack Stevens at Cambridge because he'd had an excellent game. So he's like, oh, you know, I hope I get a mention, winky face. And I was like, do you know what? If we were doing a show, you would have got a massive mention because you had an excellent game. But we didn't do a show. So apologies to Jack and all the goalkeepers who had fantastic performances last week because we just completely ignored them.
Yes, we do apologise. But of course, there will be many fantastic performances from those goalkeepers to come, won't there? And I said socialising at the top of the show there. So you've been in Dubai, of course, for the majority of the summer. In fact, how has the summer been for you, Richard? What's been new? What's the goss? What's been happening? Any highlights? Any particular highlights?
If I'm honest, no. And the reason being is that Dubai in the summer is like a furnace. So I very rarely go outside when I am over here. And obviously the transfer window has been open. So I have been a recluse and I have essentially had Groundhog Day every day for the last 4 months. But that will come to an end soon because, of course, there isn't too long left in the window. But I did do a little bit of socialising not so long ago. It was actually a couple of weeks ago now. I mean, that's the last time I left the house, I think. But yes, I did do a little bit of socialising. It was very enjoyable. It was with Stephen Taylor, the old Newcastle centre-back. Centre-back? Left-back? He was more of a left-sided centre-half, wasn't he?
He was a centre-half, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But he, and it was meant to be just a quiet lunch, but it turned into a little bit more than that. But the reason I mentioned it was it came up and I thought, do I mention it? Do I not? And it's the first time I actually met him. And yeah, it was nice to meet him. He lives in Dubai. So it was, let's have a chat, have a catch up, etc. And I had to mention it. I had to mention the Stephen Taylor moment, the save on the goal line. But I was really cautious of mentioning it and probably rightly cautious because as soon as I mentioned it, he was great and it was very, very funny. He told me the whole story about how it kind of happened and his thoughts behind it, which I'll touch on in a minute. But he goes, it is funny. I played hundreds of games in the Premier League. And when anyone sees me, all they mention is my save on the line. He goes, forget all the great things I did. You know, some of the goals I scored, some of the big performances. They all mention that one moment.
You've fallen into the trap there because you'd be the first to criticise those. You always say David Seaman, he'd done everything that he did in the game. And people want to talk about Naeem. They want to talk about Ronaldinho. You've done exactly the same thing there.
I've done exactly the same thing. And as soon as it came out of my mouth, I was like, do you know what? I probably shouldn't have done that. But he told me the story. It was quite funny in that essentially at the time, he kind of explained how the build-up in play and obviously got himself on the line like all defenders should, trying to protect the goal. But he was absolutely convinced that when he'd made the save, the referee was still back at the halfway line. It was only then when he looked up and he realised the referee was about 6 yards from him, stood right next to him and saw it blatantly. It's just it is still one of the classic Premier League moments, the way he was writhing on the floor and the acting skills. But I didn't realise it was, and you probably know this because you're a bit of a football geek, because it was the same game, wasn't it, that Kieran Dyer and Lee Bowyer had their fight. So he said it did him a massive favour because then after the game, they've come in the dressing room and he's thinking, I'm going to get so much stick here. And of course, the fact that then about 10 minutes after he's been sent off, Lee Bowyer and Kieran Dyer also come into the changing room and are still fighting. He said it just took the heat off him completely.
I did not know that. No, that's interesting. Yeah, that's been completely forgotten from that game.
Yeah. So, but I did do a bit of socialising. I left the house. I had a beverage or two, which was very enjoyable. And yeah, I feel like that has probably been the highlight of my last 4 months. But as I say, there's only, what, is it 11 days today left in the transfer window? I need to check. I've lost track of days, but things will open up very soon.
They will. Of course, the highlight has also been the fact that many deals have been done. We will finish off or clean up some of the GKs on their way at the end of the show, but it's been busy like we spoke about last time. It's been all go. And of course, many deals, Richard, that have been done from that little office of yours.
Mm, from this little office with lots of screens surrounding me and my two dogs sat either side.
Well, we do have plenty coming up. We're going to cover off all the action from the top four tiers of English football. Some of the stuff from outside of England too, some global action. Of course, the Women's World Cup taking place. We've got a bit of action from the US. And we are going to touch very briefly on some of the action from last week too in the Premier League. We're just going to clean up some of the main talking points. We will get on with the show, but can I just tell you my one highlight from this summer? It's got nothing to do with goalkeeping, actually, unfortunately. Although this particular individual, I suppose you could say, is super confident and doesn't let much faze him, I guess, is what you'd say. So I bumped into someone on a walk, the Queen's Walk, actually, in London. It's a lovely walk. You should take it along the south bank of the Thames. But who do you think I bumped into? I'm going to say that I reckon a number of listeners to this podcast would have probably watched the show that this gentleman stars in.
Mm, okay, go on.
A gentleman named Gabriel Macht, a.k.a. Harvey Specter.
No.
Yes.
Did you really?
Oh, I did. Can you believe it?
Incredibly jealous. Incredibly jealous.
Very much the number one in his team as well, actually. So that's where we're going to bring it back to goalkeeping. But yes, I was just walking along the Thames and he was propped up, just leaned up against the wall with a cup of coffee, looking as just Harvey Specter as he possibly could look, just chilling out, just looking like a G. And it was one of them where ordinarily you just walk past, but I thought, I can't walk past him and not say anything. I have to say something.
Did you call him Harvey?
I didn't, but then I got confused because you know how his dad is in suits as well? His dad plays that lecturer, doesn't he, at the old university? And I suddenly got confused with whether he was called Gabriel or whether his dad was called Gabriel. So I thought, well, I can't call him Gabriel if his dad's name's Gabriel, so I don't know what to do. So then I messed it up completely. I just kind of went up to it. Yeah, it's terrible. I kind of went up to him and I was like, oh, you know, you do the, oh, hi, mate. Like, how you doing? And he obviously looked at me and thought, do I know this guy? Like, I don't know. I don't know who this guy is. And then I just did that. Oh, look, no, I just, you know, I just wanted to just look, I love the show. I love the show. A friend got me into it recently and I just, yeah, I think it's great. So I just, yeah, I'm not going to keep you. I just, yeah. And he was like, all right, mate, whatever.
And he turned around and said, Matt Beadle, GKU podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's one of those afterwards, you know, when you think, should I have said anything? I don't know whether I should have done, but I had to. And to be fair to him, he did say, you know, he held up his cup of coffee with his shades on and kind of said, hey, thanks for watching. And I was like, not a problem.
Nice.
Not a problem, you. Thank you. Thank you for letting me watch.
Indeed. And thank you for listening.
On with the show.
Let's do it.
Right, so we are going to start in the Premier League. But as I said, there's some key points to discuss from the first week, which we're going to creep in to this week and join them up with some of the action from this weekend too. Now, these are quite simple yes or no answers, pen or no pen answers, foul or no foul answers. So there were some big talking points from the first week, and those were Andre Onana versus Wolves, pen or no pen, foul or no foul. That was an altercation, I think, with Craig Dawson. The challenge was there. Guglielmo Vicario v Brentford, pen or no pen, foul or no foul on Kevin Sharder. Both of those not given as penalties. Bernd Leno v Everton, foul or no foul. That was James Tarkowski, who was adjudged to have fouled Bernd Leno, which then ended up in a goal which was disallowed. And then this weekend, Jordan Pickford v Aston Villa, pen or no pen, foul or no foul on Ollie Watkins. That was given. Sam Johnston, foul or no foul, pen or no pen on Eddie Nketiah last night. That was given.
Okay, let's start with Onana. Oh, real tricky one, this. Real tricky one. And look, ordinarily, I'm going to be no foul on all of these because of the fact that I do tend to stand up for the goalkeepers. This one, where there's a slight difference. So I always think when you're challenging for the ball and you don't get it, it's ordinarily not a foul. The only slight difference with this is that he's gone for it and you can see kind of mid-air he's realised, I'm not getting this. And then he's decided to do whatever he can to put off the player in question. And it's probably a foul, annoyingly, just for the fact that he hasn't, once he's realised he can't claim it, he, I think, could have done something different in that moment. It would have looked bad because it had been caught in no man's land and they might have just headed it into an empty net. But then that's why I think he's done what he's done, knowing that there's a good chance I get away with this and I can still impact the play in some way. But annoyingly, I am probably veering towards foul. The next one was, remind me?
Vicario.
So Vicario, for me, this is no foul. Again, and you know, look, there's such a, obviously it's all about the interpretations of the laws, but I just think if a goalkeeper's coming out to spread, like once you perform that action, you're not doing it to foul the person, you're doing it to make the save. So for that reason, whatever happens thereafter happens. So for me, it's no foul. Next.
Bernd Leno on Tarkowski.
Yeah, this for me is a foul. And again, I'll get it. I do understand it from Tarkowski's point of view because he's not actually done anything. But the fact that he had the ball in his hands and effectively Tarkowski has forced him to drop it because of how it is, that for me is why I would give it as a foul.
Wow, okay.
You don't agree, but that's fine. Next.
Jordan Pickford, Aston Villa on Ollie Watkins.
Yeah, for me, this is no foul. Although the fact that he's kind of come out in the way he has and sort of swung an arm, I can see why there are questions. But for me, it's no foul because going back to the point I made before, I do think the main intention is to come and try and make the save, make himself as big as he can. And there's a follow through. It's just the fact it's a slightly odd follow through.
Okay. Sam Johnston last night, foul or no foul, Eddie Nketiah.
Annoyingly, this is a foul, but I hate these. I really hate these because I must have had about four or five of these myself in my career when the player just kicks the ball miles away, never going to get it, but they are just playing for the penalty. But I do get if they can execute it well enough and they can get it far enough away from the goalkeeper and they can then drag their feet and make contact, then ordinarily they are going to get it. So it, I understand why it is a foul, but it annoys me.
Well, what a start to the show, Richard. I'm going to say that I disagree with you quite a bit there. We won't get into it too much, but yeah, Onana and Pickford from the weekend, I would say those two are stonewallers, really, in my opinion. The Vicario one, that's a bit of a grey area that I don't think is ever going to get cleaned up. That's just going to be down to interpretation from the referee and the nonsense VAR at the time. Bernd Leno, I mean, that's harsh to give that as a foul on Bernd Leno. I think that's a perfectly fine goal scored. And yeah, Pickford, again, I don't know what I just said, but stonewaller on Ollie Watkins. That is 100% a penalty. I don't even think that's a talking point, is it? That's not even a discussion.
Well, this is it. We can agree to disagree. And that is the beauty of this show.
Okay, so further on Sam Johnston, we'll get into the action from last night, actually, because that is probably the biggest goalkeeper talking point so far this summer, really. Crystal Palace 0, Arsenal 1. Aaron Ramsdale was starting that game, or did indeed start that game, with David Raya on the bench. What do you make of this signing? Because plenty is being said about whether or not it is the right decision by Mikel Arteta to effectively have, to definitely have two number ones at his club, especially when you consider how successful Aaron Ramsdale has been for the Gunners over the past two seasons. What do you make of it?
I don't think it'll work. I know there's been, there's lots of different sides to this. Some people are of the opinion you just get the best players that you possibly can, two in each position, maybe three for some clubs, but two in each position, and then go and fight it out. But I do think goalkeeping is different. And one of the reasons being is that you've always got that slight worry. If you've got two goalkeepers that fully intend to play, neither of them are a number two. They're not an age to be a number two, and ability-wise, neither of them sees themselves as a number two. So I just think then what you could get is then whoever's playing, you know that you've got the person behind you who, of course, they're going to support you because the Goalkeepers Union being what it is, they'll support you. But also you kind of know like one or two mistakes and you're out. You're not necessarily playing with the same freedom, the same expression. It can then potentially change your game ever so slightly. And you could see this whole kind of yo-yoing of goalkeepers this season, which then even that, I don't think that then breeds confidence throughout the team. So for me, I'll always say this, I love the dynamic where you've got your 1-2-3 and you've got your one who is the outright one. Of course, you've got a two that's pushing and is more than good enough to play, but at the same time, they understand their role in the team. And it might be one where you've got the likes of a Ramsdale or Raya playing, and then you've got that perfect number two. Maybe someone who's a bit more experienced that's played a good number of games at the level. You know they can step in. They're going to be a brilliant support. I mean, Asmund Begovic did it so well, you know, at Everton over the last couple of years. Great example. Whenever he stepped in, he was very, very good, but he was an excellent number two for Jordan Pickford, who just so happens probably had his best couple of seasons in an Everton shirt. And I think when you get that dynamic and then the three that again, is more than good enough to step in if they need to step in, but they again understand their role, whether that bit of connection between maybe the staff and players. They're essentially an insurance policy of sorts. And I think if you can get that dynamic as a 1-2-3, the goalkeeping department tends to operate very well. And it's a lot of these number ones that we see that then tend to be the better performers in the Premier League. I think this idea of having, you know, real fierce competition between the two, if they do start yo-yoing back and forth, in, out, you never really get that consistency, which is what I think you need in the goalkeeping position.
Yeah, the competition argument is a funny one, isn't it? Because I've seen many people say, including Mikel Arteta, to be fair, you know, we've got two left backs, we've got two forwards, we've got two midfielders, we've got two wingers. Why can't we have two goalkeepers vying for the same position? And that's why goalkeeping is a very different position, right? Because you don't really have that. The dynamic is very different. And then also the feeling that an Aaron Ramsdale now, or a David Raya, whoever it is that is the number one, will potentially then feel like they need to chase the game. And that's the last thing you want as a goalkeeper, because they are feeling like they have to prove to Mikel Arteta that they can be better than the other goalkeeper, whereas that's not really what you want, is it?
No, that's exactly it. And that's where, look, my prediction, it's quite a, you know, I'm sure pretty much most people will agree with me on this one, is that I think, you know, by this time next year, they won't both be there. That's, you know, it's as simple as that. Now, how long they are both there, they'll certainly both be there till at least January. But, you know, does one of them go in January? And then even that can then cause a bit of an issue. If someone has established themselves as a one, the other one isn't going to be happy. So they're going to want to move on in some capacity. Obviously, at the moment, Ramsdale does have the shirt. But, you know, if that were to change, then, you know, Aaron Ramsdale, certainly when he's knocking on the door for England and he's got the best 10 years ahead of him now, he won't sit as a number two for long at all. Similarly, David Raya, you know, he's obviously in the mix with the Spanish squad, and certainly after last season, arguably the best performing goalkeeper in the Premier League. Is he going to want to be a number two for too long? Absolutely not. So look, something will change there. It's not going to be now, you'd think, until at least January, but I just can't see that lasting long.
And with Palace, we will just mention this slight discontentment, it seems, with that number one spot. Sam Johnstone, of course, finished the season last season, has started this season, was the main man during pre-season because Vicente Guaita, apparently, according to Roy Hodgson, refused to play. And Hodgson has since come out and said, at the moment, it's Johnstone as our number one and Remy Matthews as our number two.
Yeah, and it's obviously without knowing what's gone on behind the scenes, there was a switch last season, obviously Guaita to Sam Johnstone, who, credit to him, has stepped in, done really well. And of course, back end of the season, the team were excellent. He was very good. And so predictably, he's got the number one shirt this season. Guaita clearly isn't happy, it looks, in that position as the two, although he's not even the two at the moment. So again, you kind of feel, and this is where I get it from a different perspective, in that as a goalkeeper, you know, when your stock's high and when, you know, and certainly Guaita's been a mainstay for quite some time now and been that number one for quite some time, I'm sure he sees this as his time, if he's not going to be the number one, to potentially move on. But again, we haven't seen anything there. There's been a few like that, because even like Hugo Lloris, again, still at Spurs, and you kind of feel like surely something has to happen there. There's obviously all sorts of rumours in regards to Palace, who they might bring in to come in and challenge Sam Johnstone. Some of the rumours are quite interesting. Again, will it be the right goalkeeping dynamic? Are they really going to go with Sam Johnstone as the one and bring in a two, or are they going to bring in someone to challenge, similar to the Raya Ramsdale situation? That will no doubt play out this week. So yeah, really, really interesting situation.
Okay, moving on to Tottenham 2, Manchester United 0. And two massive moves in the goalkeeping market here as well. Two goalkeepers replacing custodians at their respective clubs for more than, what, 10 years or so. Plenty to say on both. We'll start with Vicario. So a few eyebrows raised after that first game against Brentford. Needlessly so, I think. But those eyebrows were unraised for this one. Pretty solid throughout. A couple of spectacular looking stops from Casemiro and Rafa Varane.
Yeah, really good saves. And it annoyed me listening to Gary Neville's comments, because, do you know what, there's been a few this week, and we'll touch on all of them, but both top saves. You actually look at ball whipped into the box, his footwork to get himself back into position, the speed of reaction, obviously huge athleticism that he's seemingly got to make those saves. You know, not every goalkeeper makes those saves, but they were kind of dismissed a little bit by Gary Neville. Both being very central was one of the comments that he made. And the fact that he loves to flick his legs was another.
He loves kicking those legs up, doesn't
That's
he?
That's it. Loves kicking those legs up, doesn't he, Just? Which again is, you know, I suppose use a high jumper as an example. Like if you're going to spring in a certain way, you can't necessarily control that. It's not like you're doing that consciously. It's just the fact that he is incredibly agile, very explosive. And when you're springing off the ground in that way, it's very difficult to keep your legs down. Your legs are naturally going to come up, and also it softens the landing in a way when you actually come down and, you know, land on your side or your back or wherever it might be. So yeah, silly comments, but I thought they were both top saves. And credit to him, as you mentioned, there was one or two questions after the first game, but I thought he was very good in this game.
Speaking of Gary Neville, he was beaming at Andre Onana's distribution, and you can understand it because we haven't really seen this for Manchester United ever, really, bar Edwin van der Sar kind of touching on it. But when you look at the change here in goalkeeping, just watching Onana play for United, I don't think I can recall such a drastic shift in goalkeeping personnel quite like this one. I was having a think over the weekend, and I don't know, Petr Cech to Bernd Leno perhaps at Arsenal, that was a bit of a shift because Petr Cech had never had to play out from the back. And then maybe Joe Hart to, it was Claudio Bravo, wasn't it? And then Edison, of course, which was a massive shift. But David De Gea to Andre Onana is so different to see.
Yeah, it is. And I think that, and again, you've got to say Onana is very much in that category of an Edison. You know, and obviously watching him play, it's just the confidence. You know, that little one where he's threading the ball into the sitting midfielder to play out to the fullback, but does it with such confidence. And, you know, again, it would scare the life out of me thinking about it, where you've got a player to your left, player to your right, and you're having to play it straight through the middle. Even some of the ones that he makes look quite simple, where, you know, he's firing it out to a fullback, but again, it's just the detail on the pass is really impressive. And I think, again, the way that obviously Ten Hag's going to want to play, you can see why it is such a good fit for them.
Over to Anfield, Liverpool 3, Bournemouth 1. Neto, very unlucky, I thought, with a penalty scored by Mo Salah. Alisson with excellent saves in the second half from Justin Kluivert and Hamad Traore. But those came after some slightly uncharacteristic distribution from Alisson in the first half.
Yeah, tough first half for Alisson, I think. I think the goal, it's one of them. It's a tough ball over the top. And certainly when, it sounds ridiculous, but when the weather's dry and it's holding up. Now, this actually didn't ever pitch, but it was one that, you know, I think he'll look back on that, and he's obviously seen it coming over thinking, oh, this is probably just going to make the box. Once he gets close, he realises this isn't going to make the box. Of course, at that point, he's in no man's land, and once the ball does drop, it's in an empty net to put it into. So it was just the wrong decision in the moment. And then obviously soon after that, he's gone to play a ball to the fullback, and just a lack of concentration, really. It was almost like his left foot got stuck in the turf a little bit. Didn't quite get, well, he got no weight on the pass whatsoever. And of course, they then, I think that led to a foul and a booking and what have you. So a couple of iffy moments, but yeah, certainly made up for it with a couple of the saves he made. The save you mentioned from Neto, I thought was an excellent penalty save, and really, really unfortunate. And even the one that he saved and they then followed up for the goal, I felt a bit sorry for him on that, because there is a significant deflection. So as he's gone to dive, he's had to really change what he was going to do. And I don't think there's any way in which you're able to hold this ball. It looks a little bit scruffy because it then breaks and they score and you wonder, could he hold it? But I think the fact that it takes a deflection, there's very little he can do.
You know, that's two on the no man's land count for you so far in this podcast. Mm.
I feel like I didn't use that term, and I don't really like that term.
No,
if I'm honest, I didn't use it at all last year. But I'm trying to think what other term I could use, but it was, yeah, it was a frustrating one, because I've had it myself many times when I played, where it's that the one that I always hated was the one that was straight down the middle and it would be played over the top and you can't really pick it up, because when it's at least on a bit of an angle, you can just about pick up the flight of it. But when it's straight down the middle, especially when it's dry pitches, I've seen a couple of these this weekend where you're thinking, okay, is it going to actually run through? Probably not. It's going to stop up in the grass, and then it sometimes ends up being like a challenge for a header and you're so far out of your goal, it can go anywhere. And when it is then put into the empty net, you know, you look pretty bad on the back of it. But that's the one negative to the fact it was actually really good weather at the weekend, unusually. It wasn't for the first weekend in the Championship, etc. But this weekend just gone, the weather was good. It was bright, sunshine. The pitch is maybe just holding up that little bit more, and it does make those balls over the top a little bit trickier.
Okay, so if you are indeed saying that this mythical dwelling of no man's land does exist somewhere on a football pitch, where exactly, if you could pinpoint the location, if you could stick a pin in it and you had to send it to someone and said, I'm here in no man's land, where exactly would that be?
I mean, that is one heck of a question. I mean, where is No Man's Land? No one knows. That's the truth. It's, you know, there's people that live there, but nobody knows where it is.
It's a constantly evolving location. Okay. City ground, Nottingham Forest 2, Sheffield United 1. Matt Turner, just quickly some points to finish up the Premier League action. Matt Turner, some lovely hands from a Vinicius Souza strike. Don't see too much of those these days. And Aston Villa 4, Everton 0. 250 Premier League appearances up for Jordan Pickford. We've spoken about the penalty already, but a really good save from Moussa Diaby. And Andy Hinchcliffe at the other end, some absolute guff, I'm going to call this, on Emi Martinez and the distribution that he was offering. He said that, what was it that he said? Something about the fact that you certainly can't compare him to Edison. It came from absolutely nowhere. I don't know why he felt like he needed to compare Emi Martinez to Edison in that moment. It's not like he was then saying, when Ollie Watkins skewed one wide, I tell you what, he's nowhere near Harry Kane, is he, with his finishing, Ollie Watkins. You just don't say that. But I will give him some credit because he was better on the double save from Arnaud Danjuma and Neil Mope from Emi Martinez, as he was actually with Alex Palmer of West Brom, which we'll get onto shortly. So he's showing a bit of understanding on goalkeeping, but balancing that out with some nonsense as well.
Yeah, well, it was nonsense because, and if you watch the actual moment, it's ball's been played back to Martinez. He's essentially on his goal line, and it was a little bit of a... the ball back to him, I can't think of the lad it was now, played it back to him. But so Martinez taking a touch, he's looked up for options and there is nothing. There is nothing. So, you know, he's done the right thing. Good touch. Right, where's the play? Can I bounce it into the midfield? No, I can't. Can I play it back to the fullback? No, that avenue's closed off. So in a split second, he's made the right decision, which is essentially almost like a Sabutio kick. That's what I'm going to call it, where you just swing the leg and just try and get it, which is the correct decision. He manages to chip it about 25 yards out and, you know, it doesn't lead to anything. So in that moment, under immense pressure, he has made the right decision. So actually, I would argue that that's good distribution. And actually, Emi Martinez's distribution is very good. Very good. Is it Edison's level? I mean, again, maybe not, but is anybody? You know, it's but in terms of his distribution in the Premier League, he's one of the best. His all-round game, you know, he's certainly one of the best. So, yeah, it was a silly comment. But as you say, he is normally, when we talk about our pundits and our league table of pundits, he would be up there for me because he is normally very generous when it comes to goalkeepers. It was an excellent save from Martinez. Moved into position very quickly, very quick reactions. It was actually his set position which allowed him to make the save as well. He got his body weight exactly where it needed to be and got down really sharp. The save from Alex Palmer, I know we haven't gone into the championship just yet, but it was a top save and he actually described it very well and understood the fact that the player, I think it was Dan James at the time, has opened up. So the intelligence Alex Palmer shown there just to shift slightly, predicting what is likely to happen, the speed of feet, the top hand, the power, and he's touched on all these things. So ordinarily, he is very good, so I will let him off this one moment.
There is actually one more game, and we have to mention this for West Ham fans, of course. They beat Chelsea 3-1 on Sunday. Quite the game, and this one, especially for Alphonse Areola, the designated number one at West Ham. Again, another bit of discontentment, maybe you could say. We're led to believe that Lucas Fabianski wasn't overly happy at dropping down to that number two spot. So interesting to see how that pans out this season. But Areola doing his cause no harm whatsoever because a couple of very good saves in this one, including a penalty stop from Enzo Fernandez.
Indeed. Firstly, I do think it will be really interesting how this plays out. I just wonder, this was a transition that I thought might have happened sooner, but massive credit to Fabianski. He's kept his level so high for so long now. I do just wonder, part of me thinks this will work out. In that I believe over time, now that the transition happens, if Areola continues to play at this level, then that becomes the one and two. And I could see, where I said before, I don't see in a year's time it being Rare and Ramsdale at Arsenal, I could see in a year's time it still being Areola and Fabianski. Because I think that, you know, once that transition happens, and as long as Areola steps up, which he certainly did in this game, then I could see that becoming the way forward. Penalty save top. I was actually going to mention more so the other save that he made from the deflection where... That was one of the things. This was, and I actually put in my notes here, tweet. And the reason was I was very close to tweeting something, which is quite rare for me. Is it still called Twitter or whatever it's called now? But I was very close to putting something out on that platform because I kind of felt like there wasn't really any love given to the save at all from the commentators at the time. And it was such a top save at the time. The deflection going right in the bottom corner and the speed at which he got down and got fingertips to get it around the post. I thought it was an exceptional save.
Yeah. Yes, there it is, that music returning. It is the EFL overview, and starting in the Championship, you've already mentioned him, but Alex Palmer, MOM, in the 1-1 draw between Leeds and West Brom. Big saves twice from Dan James and once from Joel Gelhardt. At the other end, Ian Melier, still a Leeds goalkeeper, much to Carl Darlow's possible consternation, you might say, with very good reactions to deny Jed Wallace from opening the scoring. Vaslav Hladký playing a huge part in Ipswich's three wins on the trot since returning to the second tier. He scampered back to tip over an audacious attempt from QPR's Elias Shaiyer as the Tractor Boys left Loftus Road on a high and leaving home park. In similar spirits was Southampton and Gavin Batsunu with a 2-1 victory over Plymouth. A possible shout for a penalty here, not given as Batsunu challenged Ryan Hardy, the attacker instead receiving a yellow card, and Connor Hazard, although on the losing side, with an excellent first half save from Adam Armstrong's free kick.
Yeah, indeed. We've mentioned it already, but yeah, Alex Palmer, excellent performance. Couple of big, big saves in this. The top hand one, which you spoke about. Several more saves of note as well. Big well done to him, because I know obviously there was some links with him and Luton. You've also got that factor with a lot of the goalkeepers. Did very well last season, but when it's that following season, can you then follow that up as that number one, which certainly started in the right vein? Ilya Melier, top save to his right, and again this got a lot of love from Hinchcliffe on the commentary, and rightly so. Again, thought the footwork and the reaction to his right-hand side to get fingertips was very, very good. I'm really fascinated to see how that plays out with him and Darlow. Darlow, no chance he's going there as a number two, and I can't help but feel they thought that Melier would move on. That hasn't happened yet, and certainly hasn't been much word of it happening. So again, fascinated to see how that one plays out this season. The Hladký save, I've got down as one of my saves of the weekend, and the reason being is that it's such an unusual save. Shot from the halfway line, he's a long way out, as you would be. His footwork is excellent, but if you can imagine running back towards your goal, keeping an eye on the ball the whole time, and then having the speed of thought and the, I suppose, the awareness in that moment to then get a good hand and put it over the bar, I thought this was an exceptional save. Really difficult situation, but he dealt with it brilliantly. Batsunu had an excellent game. I actually watched this game. Both him and Connor Hazard, I thought, were fantastic in this game. Really entertaining game. I thought he was a little bit fortunate with this moment. I do think it was the correct decision, but I always think, certainly when you're that far out and you then do commit, you go down. I go back to my point I made before when we were doing the whole foul or no foul that we completely disagreed on. But I think when you do go out and you commit yourself, there's always that risk that the player does exactly what he tried to do here, kick it away, try and make some contact, and ordinarily they can buy the penalty. I'm glad this wasn't given, but at the same time, I just think you need to be a little bit careful in that situation. And Connor Hazard, a couple of big, big saves. Felt for him on the winning goal because it was a super save to his right. The save on the free kick, I watched this over and over again. The speed at which he got across to his left, the wall did him absolutely no favour. Went straight through the middle of the wall, but again, his 6'7" frame to get across to his left, big hand up over the bar, and he certainly made a top start at Plymouth.
So I semi-agree with you on the Batsunu incident there. We're kind of half restoring parity here. I just think that, yes, if you are coming out that far, then you can't expect to not give away a penalty. I think you're taking a risk. I think Hardy was very unlucky to receive a yellow card. I do think it was a pen, and I don't like this whole motion of goalkeepers racing out and then just slightly withdrawing at the very last millisecond. I think that's not an excuse to say I didn't touch him. Because you've raced out, because you've fallen to the ground, you can't then at the last second, for me anyway, take your hands away, because you are still making that contact.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I kind of feel like we're coming slightly close to go. We started on a bad note, but we're gradually bringing things back.
Into League One, where David Busson was looking trim in short sleeves for Reading as they put an end to a decent season start from Stevenage. Celebrating saves is always something we like to celebrate, so a quick nod to Lucas Jensen, who seemed to very much enjoy his block from Taylor Perry in Lincoln's win at Shrewsbury. Dan Grimshaw and Sam Howe sharing the spoils of satisfactory saves as Blackpool and Leighton Orient drew a blank. Doing the same at Adams Park was Burton's Max Crocombe, in for the injured Jamal Blackman, with fine stops from Sam Vokes of Wickham. And Nicholas Bailo-Kapic, very unlucky to concede here, and I'll put that in inverted commas, concede in the 90th minute as Peterborough fell to Derby Day defeat against Northampton. Mitch Pinnock's speculative effort adjudged to across the line by the assistant referee, who, let's say, wasn't quite in line with the goal line.
No, I felt for him here, because it's another really awkward one. Not similar to Hladký one, because it was obviously a slightly different situation, but similar in the fact that it's that one just under the crossbar, and do you try and catch it? Do you try and help it over? Do you kind of palm it out and give yourself some time to go and collect it? And I've watched this a couple of times, and for the life of me, I can't see it crossing the line. Again, there aren't the camera angles at that level to truly see, but I thought he was very unfortunate here, and he certainly made a really good start there, has to be said. I thought it was excellent last week. Sam Howells, a couple of massive saves, great save to his left-hand side in particular, really enjoyed that. Dan Grimshaw carried on in the same fashion as last season. Again, big save in this. Lucas Jensen, as you mentioned, big step up for him to be playing League One now. Big one-on-one save, certainly enjoyed it. And Max Crocombe, I'm really pleased for, because I know there was a bit of uncertainty in the summer. Would he stay at Grimsby? Would he move on? Decided to move on. And certainly at the moment, when that opportunity comes, as soon as it has for him, you know, the opportunity to grasp it in League One. And certainly I saw he was team of the week, and rightly so. Big saves in this. The fingertip save in particular I enjoyed to his right. Really powerful. It's going right in the far corner. Just gets enough on it to put it around the post. So delighted for him.
And finishing up on League Two, where we'll quickly touch on Jake Turner. So he's had to wait rather patiently throughout his whole career, really, to bag a stint as number one. He's been given the nod ahead of Glenn Morris at Gillingham this season. And as things stand, he is yet to concede a goal. It's four games, four wins, four clean sheets, and at the weekend, a penalty save from Dom Telford to preserve that record at Crawley.
Indeed. I'm sure we're not going to do Clean Sheet Club just yet, but I am fully assuming that he is top of the charts at the moment with that. And do you know what? I'm absolutely delighted for him. He's one of the lads that I work with. And do you know what? Give credit as well to the manager here, in that to change a goalkeeper at the start of the season, who was your player of the season last season, Glenn Morris, excellent season for Gillingham last season, but on the back of Jake Turner having a really strong pre-season, he's given him the nod. And yeah, it couldn't have gone any better to this point. Four clean sheets, four really strong performances, to throw a penalty save in there as well in the last game, four 1-0 wins, which is, I think, very Neil Harris, I think it's fair to say. So, really, really good start for him. Delighted for him, and he's certainly given himself a platform to build on.
And the other big news to come out of Wrexham, which was announced yesterday, is that Ben Foster has, for the second time in his career, announced his retirement from professional football. Wrexham are currently now looking for a number one.
Yeah, indeed. Do you know what's interesting on this? I streamed the game the weekend. I haven't actually had a chance to speak to Ben directly yet. I'm sure I will this week at some point. But I've told this story many times, but my last ever game in professional football was a 6-6 draw away at Dagenham. And for me, then literally the next morning, I went and saw the manager and just said, look, you know, I don't think I'm quite at the level I was and want to be. And, you know, I think sort of pride kicks in. And certainly seeing the speech he gave on his social media platform, you know, he takes a lot of pride in what he does. Like, if he does something, he wants to be the best at it. That's Ben. And he has been for so many years, you know, at such a top level. So I can imagine this would have, when I watched the game, I did have a thought, you know, given they've had such a crazy start to the season as well. 13 goals scored, 13 goals conceded in four games. And for Ben, where he's having so much success away from football, it is that one. He doesn't need to stay in football. Like, he's, you know, he has got a lot going. And if he is going to stay in football, he's going to want to do it at the top, top level. So part of me was surprised. But then on another hand, I did wonder watching this game. Not that he did anything necessarily overly wrong, but because of the standards he holds himself to, I wasn't overly surprised. And where I actually give him massive credit is that he's made the call now. Because had he had done this in September, it could have put Wrexham in a real bind, obviously given the transfer window, if it had closed, etc. Whereas now it does give Wrexham a good chance to bring in a goalkeeper if they choose to do so. They've obviously brought in Luke McNicholas, who's top. They've got Mark Howard there. Leighton is still there as well. So they have got goalkeepers in the building, but it also gives them an opportunity now to bring someone else in if they choose to. Clean Sheet Club. And there was me saying we probably won't do Clean Sheet Club just yet. Of course we are doing Clean Sheet Club. We won't have the table today though, Matthew, is that right?
That's correct, yes. That's
correct. Okay, time for this. And we start in the Premier League. Mark Flecken off the mark in English pro football. Vicario also off the mark in English football. Edison so far beyond the mark in English football. The mark is a dot to him. Aaron Ramsdale, number one for now. John Ruddy, back to back. Vaclav Fladke, front to front. Freddie Woodman, account open. Mark Travers, ditto. Into League One, and we've got quite a few here. Sam Tickle, unbeaten in the EFL. Dan Grimshaw, 0-0, 0-0, 0-0. Sam Howes, also off the mark in English pro football. Jack Stevens, 3 from 4. Villami Sinsalo, same. Joe Wildsmith, Rama Dama Ding Dong. Max Thompson, also off the mark in English pro football. Will Norris, hat-trick. Luke Southwood, account open, mark 2. David Button, Double Bubble, Lucas Jensen, Danish Delight, Max Strychek, Polish Perfection, Max Crocombe, Account Opened, Mark 3. And in League 2, Jake Turner, 1-0 to the Gillingham, Nick Townsend, Newport's number one again, Stuart Moore enjoying cleanliness for the first time since May 2021, Ben Hinchcliffe, Account Opened, Mark 4, Alex Bass, no trouble.
Very good, Richard. Very good. Yes, like you said there, we won't do a table just yet because there's only been a few games. I think we'll wait until around the 10-game mark before we introduce the table. But just a couple of odds and ends to tie up before we finish up on GKs on their way. Inter Miami winning their first ever Leagues Cup and first piece of silverware, thanks not to Lionel Messi, as every news outlet will have you believe, but instead we are going to say to Drake Callender and his heroics. Not only did he score his penalty to make it 10-9 in the shootout against Nashville SC, he then saved the following spot kick from his opposite number, Elliot Panico. He saved one earlier in the shootout as well. He, everyone, Drake Callender is the hero and not Leo Messi.
Absolutely. Callender, what a year he's having.
Gosh. I knew it was coming before you'd even said anything.
I was just waiting for it. I was excited about that moment. But no, Junior, you played really well, actually, I must say. And actually, the saves, he made two saves in the shootout. One, both goalkeepers made a save. And of course, it then went all the way through to goalkeepers taking it. And how often, when it does get to that point, does that tend to be the moment the shootout ends? And actually, Callender's penalty was phenomenal. Just boomed it into the top corner. And then it was a top save from his opposite number to his left-hand side. Again, absolutely smashed it, but quick reactions, great save. And yes, he is the reason that Inter Miami have won 7 in a row and won the cup.
Yes, he very much is. And also the hero was Mary Earps, with a second golden glove in as many international tournaments for England. 3 clean sheets at the World Cup en route to the final. Player of the match against Nigeria. Big saves in the final, including that penalty from Yeni Hermoso. FIFA best goalkeeper too, of course, last year. You couldn't buy her goalkeeper shirt, which caused much controversy. And the fact that she's now campaigning for those women's goalkeeper shirts to be purchased. But yes, a decent performance from her throughout the tournament, but England unfortunately falling at the final hurdle. And we should also give a mention to Cata Cole, the Spanish goalkeeper, who I thought was actually probably player of the match in the tournament. I thought she had a better game than Earps on the evening.
Yeah, I thought she was excellent. The final moment, as much as all English fans who were gutted when the final whistle went, like that moment, ball being whipped into the box, under your crossbar, corner kick, you know, you actually put yourself in her shoes. You know, I used to have it myself, where it was like you're 1-0 up, final minute, and there's a corner against you in swinging. You're thinking, go on, just put it out to the penalty spot. No, just put it out to the penalty spot so I don't know. But they've just put it right under the crossbar, and what a take last second to claim the World Cup. So no, huge credit to her. I thought she was excellent throughout, as was Mary Earps, as you mentioned. She was huge penalty save. Brilliant save with her foot. Little deflection on that one as well. Some top saves throughout. And you kind of felt her performance. You just felt when she made that penalty save, surely it is going to shift. And it just didn't. They didn't really create too much after that. When she came up for the corner at the end, I was kind of hoping they'd put it on her head, because it did feel like so much of it was about her. And she really was the key member in the English team on the day. Obviously, they didn't do that. So, yeah, huge disappointment for her, but she's come out again with huge, huge credit.
Her reaction as well after saving that penalty was just brilliant, wasn't it? You'd love to see that. All that pent-up anger and pent-up frustration just came flowing out of her.
Yeah, well, like, you could sort of visibly see her keep saying the F word. And I was trying to think back to when it's different. Every goalkeeper's different. Some show real aggression. Some show, like, real delight. Like, for me, I was just always buzzing. You know, I was just always really happy, but you could see it was real aggression. I don't know who she was telling to F off, but someone. And she kept repeating it. So there was the amount of energy. And again, she is the type of goalkeeper that plays with that passion, that energy. And I talk a lot about, you know, your optimum performance state. What is it for you? Are you the super calm goalkeeper? Are you the assertive, aggressive? What is your style of goalkeeping? And certainly with her, she is a really passionate goalkeeper and plays with real aggression and real power, to be fair. And yeah, certainly brings out the best in her.
Okay, good stuff. Nearly there. We're just going to finish up with one of these.
GKs on the way. I say GKs on the way. GKs on the way. I say GKs on the way.
Yep, there have been a few more movers and shakers. Richard, like you said, there are about 10, 11 days left of the window. So we'll clear up the ones since we last spoke. And they are David Raya, we've spoken about already. Brentford to Arsenal on a season-long loan with the option of a permanent move at £27 million. Matt Turner from Nottingham Forest to Arsenal, that's undisclosed. Kepa Arrizabalaga, which isn't really being talked about too much, to be fair. He's gone from Chelsea to Real Madrid, also on a season-long loan. Tim Krul from Norwich into Luton, that's undisclosed. Alex Runison from Arsenal to Cardiff on a season-long loan. Nathan Bishop, Manchester United to Sunderland, that's undisclosed. As is Leo Volstead from Olds Bulk Club to Blackburn. George Long into Norwich from Millwall on a free. David Button from West Brom to Reading on a free. Rory Watson from Wrexham to Doncaster on a free. Jochel Andresen from Reading to Carlisle on a season-long loan. Trevor Carson, St Mirren into Dundee, that's undisclosed. And Barbara Votikova from PSG to Tottenham on a free.
Well, there you go. Yeah, lots of interesting ones there. Certainly Tim Krul, nice for him to have an opportunity back in the Premier League. And again, you kind of feel with Kaminski and Krul, that would be a good one and two in the Premier League, which, of course, the goalkeeping jigsaw being what it is, that then leaves a slot at Norwich. George Long, with Sarkic arriving at Millwall, that's allowed him to move on there. And then certainly with, obviously, Raya coming into Arsenal, that then means that Matt Turner wants to get a move, a great move for him. And as we mentioned, a really positive start in a Forest shirt. So, yeah, some really interesting movement. And I've got a feeling there's going to be quite a bit more before the window closes.
Okay, so we're up for a gritty week and a bit or so, are we?
Well, do you know what? We've mentioned a few on the pod already, and there's just a few where you feel like something has to happen because they're going to be, you know, if they're not a number one or two and they're an established goalkeeper, they're going to want to move. The only thing is for goalkeepers is that teams don't carry an extra goalie. You know, it's different if it's a striker maybe or different positions on the field, but, you know, you have your one, two, three, and if you're not part of that and you don't agree with your position in that particular team, then you may look for a change, but it's always going to be dictated by what opportunities there are out there. And now there's not a lot at this stage in the season. That being said, you always see it back end of the window. There might be an injury, there might be a sending off, there might be a poor performance or two, and it can create that little bit more of a shake-up. Or if someone just decides we do want to quote-unquote upgrade in that position, then of course whoever is the current number one might then look elsewhere in a last minute move. So I do think we'll see a bit more. The majority has happened, of course, but yeah, given that there's still a decent enough time left in the window, I do think we'll see a handful more.
Do you know what I'd like to see that I can't recall seeing before? A double move.
Mm.
So a goalkeeper who moves to a club and within the window realises that it's not going to work out and then moves on again. Actually, Carl Darlow potentially being a good example of that. If Ian Melier does indeed stay, could Carl Darlow move on again in this window? I want to see a double move.
Mm. Do you know why you won't see it, Matthew?
Go on.
It's illegal. You can't move twice in the same transfer window. What you could do is, for instance, you could move to a club, I believe, and then go out on loan. But you couldn't do two permanent transfers in the same window.
Who was it that once did that as an outfielder? David Unsworth back in the day, I'm sure, did that, didn't he? Didn't he go to Aston Villa and then felt like the move wasn't going to work out? And so then went, played like one pre-season friendly, I think. So not officially moved to the club, maybe. And then went to West Ham, I want to say.
Do you know what? Your knowledge is better than mine.
Yeah.
Quite possibly. But yeah, the FIFA rules being what they are, which I do know now, having passed my exam. Yes, two permanent transfers in the same window are not permitted. It's called a bridge transfer. Because for instance, in fact, here you go. Here's a little bit for you. And I guess this will be of interest to some people. Because imagine, let's say that someone had like a sell-on clause. So they were worth 10 million, but there was a 20% sell-on to the previous club. That club might say, oh, I'll tell you what, we'll give you him for a million and then you can sell him on the next day for 10 million. Well, of course, that first club who had the 20% sell-on clause, they've lost out because they haven't got the 10 million, they've got a smaller percentage. So you can kind of potentially manipulate the market. So it's called a bridge transfer, and that is not allowed.
There you go, a little bit of learning to end the podcast with, Richard.
There you go. That is what we do. You've had to listen to about 50 odd minutes to get that nugget of information. You are more than welcome.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, keepers
away.